This is All Things ANSYS, a podcast from the technical support staff at PADT. Episode 5, Getting to Know Convergence Better and Hidden Gems in the ANSYS Product Family. Welcome, everybody, to episode 5 of All Things ANSYS, our podcast about all things ANSYS. Today, episode 5, like I said, and everybody's pretty busy. We actually, a bunch of people just came out of a meeting, and they're going to go back into another meeting. So this is going to be a fairly short discussion today. It's good that everybody's busy, but we wanted to make sure we stay on our schedule. And sometimes they'll be kind of short and sweet, and sometimes they'll be long and in-depth. So this will go into the short and sweet category. We were kind of hoping to use Skype this time, but Doug got called away to prepare for a meeting, so unfortunately, maybe next time we'll do that. The big thing to talk about is our listenership is up on Podbean, which is the only podcasting service that actually gives good statistics right now for free. We have over 600 listens on that, so we're hoping that shows that on Apple and Google and some of the other services we're using, we've got more. So we appreciate everybody listening, and please spread the word to your coworkers and fellow folks. And like I said, we're gonna do 10 of these and see how successful it is, and then decide whether we're gonna keep going. So if you like it, let other people know so it'll spread a little bit. So my name is Eric Miller. I'm one of the owners here at PADT, and I'm your host today. And we're gonna go around the room and do some introductions. So as usual, I'll go to my left where Mr. Ted is sitting.
This is Ted Harris. I manage our simulation support group here at PADT for ANSYS products.
This is Tom Chadwick. I'm one of the senior CFD support engineers.
Great. So those are the two that were able to fit us in between two meetings today, so we appreciate you guys coming. Today's in-depth topic is actually about convergence. It's something that if you look at our tech support calls, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Ted, but after installation issues and kind of computer issues, convergence is one of our number one topics.
Yeah. Certainly when you consider the length of time it can take to solve the customer's problems.
So what we're defining as convergence is, we're doing numerical simulation here, right? We're creating these problems, and something in the problem is nonlinear. And so you got to iterate and reduce the amount of error in the solution until you get the right answer. So you can be converging on a stress value, like you don't want your stress value to change by more than 0.5%, or you could be converging on pressure or velocity or some other CFD characteristic. Most commonly for us in the structural side is converging with contact elements. So you've got these nonlinear contact guys, but it could also be plasticity, right? So you're marching along a nonlinear stress strain curve as you add load to your part, and you know it has to iterate to move along that curve, and converging on that is a big thing. So I just asked everybody to kind of talk about what tips they can give to folks dealing with convergence, and we'll go ahead and start with Ted. What's your number one tip?
Yeah, sure. So on the mechanical side, we have to realize that we're still solving linear equations. We're essentially solving the linear spring equation, F equals KX, but with corrections to handle nonlinear behavior. So what makes a structure to have nonlinear behavior? Essentially, it's the stiffness is not a constant. If the stiffness is a constant, we just need one pass through our linear spring equation and we're done. But if the stiffness is changing for one reason or another, then we've got to use a nonlinear scheme to solve our linear equations with corrections. So what triggers nonlinearity? Well, it could be changing contact status. It could be material like plasticity, material properties that are nonlinear, or it could just be large deflection effects. So if we need to take into account the fact that stiffness changes with deflection, like a loaded fishing rod is the classic example. And so what are we doing with our linear spring equations? Well, we're essentially solving that linear spring equation, F equals KX. Typically what we know is the applied load F, and we sort of make a guess at the displacement solution, and we can run through our, our equations once, come up with a reaction load based on the applied load and the assumed displacement solution. We compare that calculated reaction load to the applied load. If it's the same within a tolerance, we're done. If it's not the same, then we've got to make some corrections, tweak our displacement solution. And the whole time as we're going through, once we have a displacement solution and a calculated reaction force, we can recalculate this, the current stiffness in the structure, and continue. So that's essentially what we're doing. And as we progress through the analysis, it may be easy to converge, or it may be difficult or even impossible to converge based on what we've got. So what does it mean to be converged? Well, in a structural analysis involving 3D solid elements, it's typically force as well as displacement that we're converging on, but typically force is the one that's a challenge. If we're dealing with shell or beam elements, then we also have moments that we're trying to converge on as well. And essentially, we're just trying to get the calculated reaction load to be the same as the applied load within a small tolerance. If it is, we're converged. And then going beyond that, we typically divide up the load into chunks. It's much easier to get convergence on a small bite of load than on all the load at once. So we typically break up the solution into smaller chunks. In ANSYS, those are called substeps. And each substep has to be converged before we can move on to the next increment of load and continue. So what happens as we go along if it doesn't converge? Well, the first thing the program is going to try to do, if it can converge on a given substep, is to bisect. And those of us that have struggled with convergence over time have probably seen the message, bisection has occurred. And really, all that means is the program has realized it can't converge on the current amount of load, so it cuts that applied amount of load in half and tries again. And if it can converge on that half bite of load, it'll do it. And continue. If it can't, it'll try cutting the load in half until it gets to the maximum number of substeps or the smallest time step size that we've specified, which are really the same thing, just different ways of expressing however many maximum bytes of load we're allowing the solver to take. So that, in essentially, is what we mean by converging and what the program is doing. And as far as what can cause convergence difficulties, well, as Eric mentioned, certainly nonlinear contact, material nonlinearities, really anything that causes large changes of stiffness during the course of the analysis can cause convergence difficulties.
From the CFD side, convergence is measured in terms of what the developers call residuals, which is basically a measure of either the momentum or the energy balance. Basically, in CFD, you're trying to solve Newton's equations. You're trying to balance the differences in the energy between the inlets and outlets of each cell that you've divided the model into. And what you're doing as the solution progresses is you're watching those residuals, and you want them typically to drop by four orders of magnitude. Usually what causes problems, well, there's a number of things that can cause problems. In CFD, it's fairly sensitive to the cell shape. So if a cell is skewed or is of a poor quality, it can cause issues where it's difficult for it to balance the energy coming in and out of the cell or the momentum. Other issues are aspect ratios of the cells can cause problems if you have cells that are of a very high aspect ratio, meaning that one side is much longer than the other. That can cause problems with the balance. The other thing that can cause problems are issues with the time step, because each time as the solution progresses, it calculates a differential and applies that differential to the solution and then tries to balance. And if you take too large of a time step, that differential change that you're that your modeling can become too large and the solution can become unstable. So you often have to try reducing your time step. The other problem that can come in is that you are trying to balance a number of different things. You're trying to balance momentum and energy. And if you've got turbulence, you're trying to also balance the turbulence as well. And sometimes those three sets of equations can sort of conflict with each other, and it can be difficult to achieve a stable solution in all three at the same time. So sometimes it's necessary to either ramp your boundary conditions. Say you're starting with a high pressure differential, you start off with a lower pressure differential and solve that, and then slowly increase the pressure differential to try and achieve a balanced solution. The other thing most common is rotation. If you've got rotating hardware, the rotational speed can sometimes cause convergence issues. So very often you have to ramp the rotational speed up for 300 or 400 iterations up to the design speed that you want to be operating at, and that can help solve convergence issues as well.
So takeaway on all this is, I think Ted said it really well, is we're really solving linear problems. And so when we run into issues, we're kind of these nonlinear tricks that we're applying, we take too big of a step, basically. Too much time, too much load, and the other one that I kind of forgot about was meshing. Definitely on the CFD side, but on the structural side as well, right? If you don't have the right mesh in your contact region, that can be a real issue, right?
Sure, yeah. And that brings up a good point. I hadn't included that on my list of heavy hitters I wanted to mention, but that is a good point, in that if your structure is deflecting quite a bit in a structural analysis, if the mesh is set up such that as the deflection occurs, the mesh stays the same quality or even better, gets better quality instead of getting worse quality, that certainly helps with avoiding convergence failure. The other heavy hitters I wanted to mention before we end the topic to help with overcoming convergence difficulties in a structural nonlinear simulation, very similar to what Tom mentioned, try more substeps. So more substeps means we're taking smaller bites of load. Taking smaller bites of load is easier to get convergence on than larger bites of load. I always tell people in a training class, just like it's easier to chew smaller bites of food, it's easier to get convergence on smaller increments of load. And another one, we talked about plasticity. A common issue with non-convergence with plasticity is the plastic hinge effect, meaning we've gotten to the point where plasticity is just continuing at one or more locations in the model with no limit. And a way to avoid that is to just make sure that our plasticity curve always has some positive slope. Mm. And what ANSYS will do is, if we go off the curve, meaning we're calculating strain that's past the last stress strain point on the plasticity curve, it assumes a horizontal line. And that's not going to work. You're just going to get infinite plasticity. So we always want to make sure we have a positive slope for that last data point, far beyond what we expect the calculated maximum plastic strain value to be. Another one, if we're struggling with a model with contact, is try reducing the contact stiffness. So in general, higher contact stiffness means more accuracy, but if the contact stiffness is too high, parts can bounce off each other instead of touching and staying in contact. So reducing the contact stiffness by factor of 5, factor of 10 can aid in convergence. And you know, we always want to do studies to make sure that our results of interest are not changing when we make changes like that. And then the final one that customers struggle with a lot is when we're relying on contact to prevent rigid body motion, before contact is established, that can cause convergence difficulties, because as soon as load is applied, our parts want to fly off into space. And sometimes we need to establish initial contact rather than relying on the parts to gradually move together and touch. And so one way to do that is to adjust the context settings, to adjust to touch, or you know, there's lots of other things that we can do, but that's probably the easiest knob to turn, is set the initial contact conditions to adjust to touch. That's not always possible, because sometimes we really want the accuracy of what's going on and that initial contact establishment, but that would be, you know, a quick way to get around that problem.
I seem to remember doing that quite a bit. And then you can always up the stiffness once you've got a well-behaved model, right? That's a solution.
Yep, very true.
The a key takeaway for me on the whole convergence issue also is try and solve these convergence problems on a small model as possible. So you're doing nonlinear, you're doing multiple iterations. There's nothing worse than spending an entire day to find out the change you made didn't converge your model.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, really helpful.
We have tried to instill and follow this ourselves for a long time, the practice of crawl, walk, run. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to debug a model that runs in 20 seconds or 2 minutes than one that runs in 2 hours or 20 hours. So start with the simple, make sure you understand it, make sure it's behaving the way you want, then add the complexity.
Or on the CFD side, one that solves in 20 hours instead of 20 days.
Correct. A lot of times it's better just to break it down and solve a small piece, mm-hmm. and understand, simplify the geometry, okay. understand the effects, and then move from there to more complex to your full geometry.
Another hint to throw out there, and this is something we do for our customers, but you can do internally with your own company, is have somebody else look at the problem. Like any kind of problem, sometimes you can get stuck in the weeds and not see the solution. So if you're having troubles converging, you try a few things to fix it, it didn't work, find a coworker, talk to your support provider, hopefully that's PADT, and have us take a look at it. A new set of eyes will often go, oh, well, your mesh is distorted here, or change this setting on your contact, or maybe change how the pressure is applied there. You've got a high gradient. And there's a lot of tools on the post-processing side that can be used. Take a look at our blog. I think we cover it quite a bit over the last couple decades. So, you know, Google Convergence, or not Google, but go to our website, go to our blog, and then search on the blog for Convergence or Converge, and you'll find a whole bunch of articles for all different products. And hopefully we'll get Michael to come and talk about this issue. Of course, exists on the HFSS side as well, when they deal with nonlinearities. And they're also very concerned over there with converging on the solution, which is kind of a different thing when they talk about convergence. But it's kind of a fun topic. If you're not on a deadline, it's kind of like playing detective to figure these things out, and can be kind of a fun hunt. But when you're on a deadline, you want to get an answer fast. You know, take a look at those resources and talk to folks. And anything else you guys want to add before we move on about convergence?
Now, one other thing I would say is, if you're having problems with convergence, sometimes it helps just to run a small number of iterations, and look at the solution at that point, mm-hmm. and see if there are any issues, hot spots.
Instead of waiting.
Yeah, yes. Instead of waiting for 1,000 iterations, run 100 iterations and look at the solution. A lot of times you'll see areas where there'll be a temperature spike or a pressure spike in the solution somewhere in the middle of the model. And you can look at that and then say, okay, there's something going on here. And then go back and look at your boundary conditions, look at your mesh, okay. and see if there's an issue in that location.
Before you found out you couldn't converge. Yeah,
right.
That's a really good point. It reminds me of a joke that sometimes I tell when I give tours around here. When we're walking by people's cubicles, how can you tell the stress analyst from the CFD analyst? And it's, well, the CFD guy has a convergence plot up on their screen. Always. Anything else, Ted?
One thought I had as Tom was talking is, in a structural nonlinear analysis, if you're really struggling, what you can do is incrementally change some of the nonlinearities into linearities. For example, if you're running with frictional or frictionless contact, you can try switching all or some of them to bonded contact temporarily. And hopefully by doing that, you can isolate where the problems are and just tweak your settings on those specific regions that are causing problems.
Great idea. That's a really good idea. It really is a process of deduction and trial and error. So, Okay. I mean, we'll probably come back to this in the future. It's a great topic, and hopefully you guys found some useful, those of you listening, found some useful hints in it. What's next? Well, our commercial. So we'll take a little bit of a break. Please do listen and consider, I'm not sure which product or service I'll peddle in it, but please do consider using it.
Hey Linda, I've been trying to run these simulations all day, but the stupid computer isn't fast enough.
I know, Dave. I wish IT would give us better computers.
Oh, you know, that reminds me. A friend of mine was saying that he got a simulation computer from someplace called PADT.
Hmm. What's so special about it?
Well, I guess they have this program called the Cube Computing Solutions, where they custom build simulation computers just to fit your needs with whatever you want, whatever graphics card you need, the amount of cores you need, whatever works best for you.
Huh. How do I get one of these?
Well, if I remember him correctly, he said you go to www.padtinc.com/cube. I think that's right.
Huh. Maybe we should tell the IT guy about this.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Welcome back from our little commercial break there. Next up on the agenda is events of interest. So we have a couple of webinars and some events coming up. Our next webinar, we actually have two webinars on the 27th of September. The first one is for Stratasys 3D printing, if you're interested in simplifying aviation certification. So actually, if you're an analyst, this is important because one of the things we do talk about is using simulation to get your parts that are 3D printed certified. That's beginning to become something that the FAA is accepting. So do attend that if you're thinking about printing any of the parts that you're using simulation on. The other is I'm actually doing one for a company called Startup. What are they called? Hardware Massive, actually, is what they're called, and They're a group that's focused on startups who are making actual hardware rather than software. If you hang out in the startup community, you learn very quickly that everybody pays attention to software, and us hardware guys get ignored. So these guys in the Bay Area made their own. It's a great. I spoke at their event last year, and I'm going to be doing a webinar on securing success in a startup with simulation. So you know, we believe strongly that one way to get your product to market faster with less issues and better performance is to use simulation. And the ANSYS Startup Program makes that very affordable to do. So if you're a startup or know a startup, let them know about that on the 27th. And then on the 28th here in Arizona, we're going to be at the Arizona Technology Council Smart City Summit. This is actually our annual IoT event. It started out with just IoT for basically utilities, and has grown to be all IoT. We need to change the title next year. I'll try and advocate for that. But if you're interested in IoT and you're in the Valley or in Arizona, come out for that event. We'll have a booth. Might be talking as well. I think I'm on a panel at that. The big event is on October 4th, which is the ANSYS Arizona Innovations Conference. This is the ANSYS User Group meeting annual. Last year was awesome. We had customers come and speak. We had ANSYS technical people and PADT technical people speak. This is not a sales pitch at all. It's a technical meeting with your peers. We strongly recommend you convince your boss to give you the day to go see this. It is a worthwhile event, and you know, we're still talking about the one we had a year ago, so hopefully this one will create new memories. And then the last event, which is also an Arizona event, is AZ Bio. That's our big medical device and pharmaceutical and other biological engineering companies get together, and we hand out awards to folks, and PADT 3D prints those awards as well as being a sponsor of that event. So that's on the 11th. All of our events are always available in the lower left-hand corner if you scroll down on our homepage, and we have a new events calendar as well. It's a little bit easier to get more information on. If you click on the link in the bottom left-hand corner, you can see that. So I kind of sprung on the guys here, our second topic for the day. So we'll see what we come up with. Because we had some cancellations, what we want to talk about, we can't do. So one of the things I wanted to always discuss is, you know, when you use code for a long time, you find these hidden little gems in there that maybe a lot of people don't know about. And so we're going to talk about either tools, features, or full programs in the ANSYS suite that are kind of cool that maybe people aren't very, very aware of. It's hidden or just not well known. And And my favorite, because of my background academically, is the rigid body dynamics tool. ANSYS, a lot of people don't know that ANSYS has a full rigid body dynamics capability that allows you to model the motion of mechanisms, basically. And that's my, although I've never actually done it, that's my background is mechanisms design. And I just love to deal with that kind of whiz-click, literal whiz-click type devices. And so every once in a while I get to get in there and use RBD. And because it's fully integrated in the ANSYS mechanical product, it's really easy to switch it on and off and play with it. It's a pretty powerful little tool. So you guys, what's your favorite stuff that's hidden?
Well, the one that comes to my mind is something that's fairly simple, but everybody may not be aware of it, and that is within ANSYS Mechanical. Within the last year or two, a new feature was added that in the graphics window, you can just right-click and say image to clipboard. And if you're like me, you've spent a lot of years capturing screen captures or exporting graphics files out to a graphics file format, and that's time consuming. What you can do now is just, once you've got an image in the mechanical window the way you like it, you just right click, say image to clipboard, and then you can just very simply paste that wherever you're trying to go, whether it's a Word document, PowerPoint, email. It's a nice little time saver. And again, that's just right click in the graphics window, and then image to clipboard.
And I always forget. It's funny you should mention it, because I always forget it's there, and I use the Windows tool, which is like 5 mouse clicks to capture an image. So that's a good reminder. How about you, Tom?
Well, one of the things I was going to mention, there's a tool that I used actually for a customer that's looking to do a specific type of problem that hasn't been easy to do before. Basically, Fluent has an add-on package. It used to be a user-defined feature that one of the ANSYS developers wrote. It's called the macro particle model.
Oh, cool.
And normally when you're doing particle flows in Fluid codes, they treat them as discrete points within the model, but they don't affect the flow at all. The macro particle model allows you to actually track, as its name implies, larger particles, macro size particles. It is limited in that the particles can only be spherical, but if you want to do something like a ping pong ball embedded in a buoyant flow, it actually will calculate the buoyancy forces on the ball, and it will actually calculate the distortion that it causes to the flow with the ball sitting in there. And I've seen some, there are, if you go to the ANSYS website, there are a number of really cool demos that show how the model works. And you can see some really cool things like marble settling in a column of water, and they're bouncing off of each other as they drift down towards the bottom of the tank. It's a very cool system, and it was originally a UDF that was written by one of the ANSYS developers, but they had enough interest in it that they finally are incorporating it into the standard Fluent package. It's actually one of the add-on modules that you can go activate, but once you activate it, it has a full GUI that's written that allows you to define the particle size and the material of the particle, and you can define the rebound characteristics of the particles and everything, all the details that you need. It's all a fairly nice GUI.
I did not know that was there. And that actually sounds like a really good blog article if you're looking for something to write about. hint, that'd be really useful. One of the other features that I really like, kind of, and again I'm showing my age here, is in the solver, the ANSYS mechanical solver, the APDL solver, a lot of people don't realize that we have coupled physics elements. So in most cases when you do multi-physics, right, you solve for one physics, take the boundary conditions, apply to the next physics, iterate back and forth until it's converged, then move on in time. When you can actually, we have elements in there that combine degrees of freedom. So you can have thermal, voltage, displacement, all in one element. And it was brought to my mind because we were talking to a new potential customer who's actually doing a MEMS device. It was very, very handy solving MEMS things. So if you're using, you know, those other people that kind of sell themselves as a coupled physics solver out there, take a look at what's in ANSYS Mechanical APDL. There's a lot of capability in there to do true coupled multiphysics that I highly recommend. You know what, Ted?
Well, I was just going to comment on what you just mentioned. If anybody wants to look into those elements you're talking about, they're the solid 220 series of elements. Those are the ones that have the multiphysics capability.
Good. Any other hidden features? I sprung this on you guys kind of last minute. So, well, those are all good ones. I think hopefully listeners will explore and come up with a couple of their own while they're poking around. There's a lot in there that we don't necessarily use every day and that we forget about. And it's never a bad idea when you're having trouble sleeping to just peruse the manual, right? I mean, that's how I find some of these things sometimes. Like, oh, I didn't know we could do that. So, and the bigger the codes get, the more capable they get, the more there's these things that we might not know that's there. Especially if you're looking at using a niche code to solve something. Do take a look or contact whoever provides you with your ANSYS support and ask them, hey, is this capability in ANSYS? Because I think people are sometimes surprised at how much HFSS, Fluent, and ANSYS Mechanical have buried in there over the years of capability.
Yeah, I would definitely say also just get on the customer portal and look through the tutorial section under the help. There are a lot of different tutorials that are out there, example problems that they've set up over the years, and just look for what you're interested in and look in the tutorials, and you might find a tutorial that does exactly what you're looking for.
That's a great way to go. And on the mechanical side, the verification manual is how we do that. So every capability in the software is in the verification manual. So that's often the way that I figure out some of these more obscure capabilities. Good stuff. ANSYS news. The big news before our last podcast and after our last podcast was, of course, the ANSYS Discovery launch. It's more successful, I think, than we even expected. It's a big hit. Many of our customers have been playing with it. Have had the same reaction we did. Oh my God, this actually is really cool. It's not just hype. So if you have not tried it out yet, do go to our website, go to our blog article, and click on the link in there to get your free copy to check it out. Highly recommended. It's been. We also added since the podcast kind of a cheat sheet that Ted and the group put together on how to what's special about it, how to download it, how to install it, how to figure out if you got the right graphics card, etc. It's a fairly nice little write-up that should help you get up and running a little bit faster, a little practical advice. Stock-wise, the stock's at 120, which is very healthy. Was wondering if there'd be a little bit of a bump from the Discovery announcement because that does open up a new market for ANSYS. Certainly the investment press was very positive about it, but I think investors are more savvy about this space, the segment, and they realize that when somebody announces a new product that's in beta testing, they're going to wait and see how it actually impacts sales. And that's going to be, you know, a good, you know, 3 to 6 months. So we'll see how that goes. Other things going on with ANSYS. Also like to bring to your attention, it's been a long time. We actually had a guest post on our blog, which was really nice. I'm gonna butcher his name because it's French, but I think it's Nicolas Yaubert. And he works in France for one of those a French cyclotron radiation facility there. And he has, actually, I was going to bring this up as one of my favorite hidden features by a long shot is APDL math. A lot of people aren't aware what APDL math is. It's the ability to actually go in using scripting and play with the matrices and the solvers directly in the mechanical solver. So it's a very powerful tool that allows you to kind of take control of the underlying math going on in the solve process. And he did a really great blog article about using it to do some vibration analysis and some thermal stuff. Highly recommended that you take a look at it. It's really well written. You've got some good examples in there, and very useful. The other bit of news, which I can't find any official documentation on, but I know it happened by word of mouth, is that Ansys Inc. purchased CAE Associates. If you're not familiar with them, they're the one of the original Ansys support distributors from back in the day, the John Swanson days of Ansys, long before my time, actually. They're on their second generation of owners, and that second generation of owners actually sold to Ansys. So they are no longer a channel partner. Not quite sure what's going to happen in the Northeast, who's going to take over that territory, how much of it, etc. It's all a little bit up in the air, but you may, if you do work with them, you may notice on LinkedIn that a lot of the folks that you maybe work with on the technical side or the sales side are now Ansys employees, kind of similar to what happened when Mallet was acquired a couple years ago. So we'll see what happens there. The good news is that they're extremely highly technical, capable group of people, and those highly technical, capable guys and girls are still part of the Ansys world. So that's good to see. We didn't lose anybody, it looks like, in the transition. So we'll let you know when we learn more how that's going to happen. Very niche-y, but if you care about this, it's really important. The Apache Red Hawk and Totem products, Ansys acquired Apache a couple years ago, a little bit more than a couple. These are simulation tools for modeling the inside of chips, right? So most of us in the Ansys world model chip packaging and the outside of chips and maybe thermal and the whole package. These are the guys that actually look at the power management and other things down at the nanometer level in these tools, Red Hawk and Totem. Very, very powerful, capable tools if you're in that world. So they just got certification for 12 nanometer. So that's big. These are the new smaller chips, low power chips that are coming out. And so Totem and Red Hawk are kind of de facto tools for designing chips these days. And now that they can do the 12 nanometer, there was a couple press releases, including Intel, already using this to design some stuff. Something I came across as I was researching, that's pretty much all the news, but something I thought might be of interest to folks is a lot of people ask about, well, what companies has Ansys acquired? And there's actually a list. I didn't know that. If you go to investors.ansys.com/company-information/acquisition-history, or you can do like I did and just Google Ansys acquisition history, it'll show up. It's got a whole list from the original, I remember the ICMCFD purchase, all the way up through the latest one, which is the CFD post-processor. What's it called?
Insight.
And probably more soon to be seen. So if you're interested in the history of Ansys as a company and how it's grown, do check that out. It was kind of interesting to look and see. There's some in there that I forgot about, that the smaller tools that are integrated in now. So it's kind of interesting. So that's all we got for today, unless you guys want to add anything. I think we're good. So we'll go ahead and say goodbye. So we'll go again, really appreciate everybody listening. Hopefully you learned something about convergence and discovered some hidden gems in the Ansys suite and caught up on the news as well. So Ted, go ahead and say goodbye. You got anything to relate, a joke or any special information?
Well, something that popped into my head as we were chatting here today, going back several years, I was teaching an Ansys class to some new users at their facility, and they had just switched to Ansys from a different, lesser tool, we'll say. And as we were going through the class, they would ask, you know, well, can we do this? Can we get this type of result? And I kept saying, with Ansys, there's always a way. And so even though, you know, I can't guarantee with every single thing you're trying to do with Ansys, there is a way. But certainly, as Eric mentioned, it's worth looking into. Before you start looking into other codes that you may not have, look into the breadth and depth of the Ansys tools that you do have, because there may very well be a way to do what you're trying to do.
Very good. Tom?
I don't have a whole lot. The one thing I would say just as a corollary to that is that with CFD, you'd be amazed at what you can model. There's There's just about any type of, if it flows, you can model it. Yeah, all the way down to, I mean, from hypersonic flows all the way down to using polyflow to model liquid plastic flows. The range of capability in the codes and the functionality of the codes is leaps and bounds above what it was in the, even 15 years ago. Yeah. So
it is amazing how quickly things get added. So I guess my thought for the day is it's something I was actually writing about for a totally different application. Don't stop trying and exploring. You know, don't think that the answer isn't there. I think sometimes we're so used to being able to look something up in a search engine and get the answer immediately. If we don't find it literally on the first page, we kind of give up and dig deeper. There's a lot of stuff out there that we're not aware of. And it's funny because this is a totally different context I was talking about it, but it ended up being kind of a theme of today's podcast. So we'll leave it on that note. Really appreciate everybody listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks a lot, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this fifth episode of the All Things ANSYS podcast. This is our first podcast where we didn't really have any prep time and we just discussed a few things of interest. We hope you liked it. As a reminder, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with ANSYS Inc., and the opinions expressed are those of the people on the show only. For more information, visit www.padtinc.com/blog. And please share your thoughts and questions through an email to podcast@padtinc.com. See you next time.